everybody. Welcome to the Unreasonable Art of Living podcast. I'm your host, Gerd Molin. And as always, enjoy the music. Welcome back to another episode. Welcome, welcome. And as always, I hope you're doing fine wherever you are right now. This is going to be a very short episode, but nonetheless, with fun, with some very interesting article I would like to read to you. But a little update. So a lot has been happening again this week in terms of my Lumi, our company, our startup. We actually, we are four co-founders and we all distributed across Europe. We're actually meeting this weekend. So on April 19th until April 22nd, we're going to meet in Malaga. They have a little boot camp to work on some things. And we have something really cool to announce. I think since we launched the early access on February 1st, we have been working so closely with the community and have been improving the app a lot. I think last time we checked, there were like around 50 feature improvements, and even like I think we added three to four new features, major features, all in co-creation with the community. And it has been just a pleasure to work with the people and see that they actually enjoy the app and they're using it and they see value in it. And they're still just the beginning. We're just scratching the surface what we're getting into. And I think there was so much insight. Also, like, what is the potential of Lumi? And more about that next week. I really want to dedicate a whole episode on that. Also because I would like to announce something, and I think we're going to make a little video, a founder's video on the weekend as well. I want to share, and then I'm going to link it. And so, yeah, it's very, very exciting. Of course, this week, having a startup is this roller coaster of, it's a blessing that you found something you love doing. It's a curse at the same time. Because there's just every emotion involved. There's like the highs are really high, and then there's also lows, of course, because you're stressed out. There's like, okay, there are doubts. There are like things that don't work for a particular user. They're having a really old Android version and they can't get the app running. And you're like, you know, you kind of reach the boundary of what you can do because, like, yeah, of course, you kind of have to accept that. I mean, we're still in a very low but controlled amount of users. Like, we're around 200 users, but, like, you know, invite only. And I think for me, this process as well, like, to accept that there are going to be users that, it won't be running on their app because, like, for example, in this one particular user, the user has an Android version because, first of all, I'm an Apple user, iPhone user, so I don't have, like, it's very hard for me to kind of like understand the complete Android ecosystem and replicate the issue, especially when you notice that the user has an Android version from 2019 and also like an older phone. And it's really hard, and there's like in this particular case, a certain bug or like whatever appears that it's like impossible for me to replicate. So I'm trying my best to kind of like find a way to get it working. Still optimistic that we get it working for that user. But it's just a learning process that there will be users where we just can't help, especially when they have older devices. And I think it's a bit of a startup share, like, you know, just understanding what it means to develop for Android and Apple. Like, the thing with Android, even though like there's a lot of benefits to it, from a development perspective, it's really a bit of a nightmare because Android, thanks to the open ecosystem, of course, it's amazing. But you have like 14,000 devices out there. And each device, because they have like they have Android in its core, but each device, Samsung, you have, I don't know what other companies there are out there for Android. they bring a bit of like caveat. They have their own operating system. They add a bit something to it. And it just, the complexity is just so much bigger. Whereas in Apple, you have one OS operating system, and you have like, I don't know, how many devices are there? 20, 30 that are still supported. It's just a different league. It's so fascinating, but still quite happy that we actually, so far, it looks like there's only one or two users that where we have like real issues to kind of like support, get the Lumi on, but also like they just have old devices and old Android versions. So yeah, bit of a share what it actually means to develop an app for both Android and iOS, and you know, like the difficulties and complexities that come with it. And sometimes it's just like, it's very stressful because like you really want to help that user, and it's very hard because it would be easier if you could just sit next to them and you can plug in their device and you can see what's going on. But at this, then there's a lot of guessing. You know, you they report an issue, you check the error logs, you're like, okay, I think we know, but also don't know. So it's a guess. And then you try to fix the guess and you upload the update and you have to wait if it fixed it, and then it didn't fix it. So it's like the cycle of trying something and then seeing if it worked is like sometimes 1, 2, 3 days, and it's a bit frustrating. But interesting process, just something to look into. And if you're a very new listener, like, so yeah, my Lumi is actually an app product we're working on. It's an iOS Android app, and it's an app, a product that helps you to take control and take care of your emotional and mental well-being. And it helps you to really engage with yourself and understand how you're doing, and gives you very personalized recommendations based on your data. It really gets to know you, and that's what we're working on. And if you're interested at that point to join, we have an early access going on. It's going to be for free. There's no commitment involved. I will post a link in the show notes. You can join on lumi.io. That's lumii.io/early-access. But there, I'll post the links in the show notes. We're looking for testers, so just come try. But today, because I've been listening a lot to the Founders podcast, really cool podcast, and they were, in particular, the episodes about Paul Graham. And I mentioned it last episode already, and I think I read a very short passage of one of his essays. But Paul Graham, like, I mean, wow, the essays he has been writing for over 20 years, they're like hundreds. They are so good. I think I'm going to probably pick now every episode once in a while, because they're not just about startups, just life in general. And there's one essay, and I read a short passage last episode, but I want to read a bit more this time because I think it's so applicable for everyone, not just someone who wants to run a startup or like is a software engineer or like anything with product. He wrote about how to do what you love. And there's one particular part in his essay which is just so deep. And this is this notion that many people think, you know, like, oh, you found something that you love, or like you found your passion, that it means that you enjoy whatever you do in every second. And there's no struggle involved. And I'm going to read it to you now. Maybe just take a bit of water. Wait a second. And back, still here. No tea this time. Mm-hmm. Just good old Austrian water, which is amazing. All right. So I'm going to read you one part of his essay, and I'm going to link it again in the show notes. I really recommend reading it because it's amazing. So, how to do what you love. Chapter Bounce. How much are you supposed to like what you do? Unless you know that, you don't know when to stop searching. And if, like most people, you underestimate it, you will tend to stop searching too early. you'll end up doing something chosen for you by your parents, or the desire to make money or prestige or sheer inertia. Here's an upper bound. Do what you love doesn't mean do what you like to do most this second. Even Einstein probably had moments when he wanted to have a cup of coffee, but told himself he should finish what he was working on first. It used to perplex me when I read about people who liked what they did so much that there was nothing they would rather do. There didn't seem to be any sort of work I liked that much. If I had a choice of A, spending next hour working on something, or B, be teleported to Rome and spend the next hour wondering about was there any sort of work I would prefer? Honestly, no. But the fact is, almost anyone would rather at any given moment float about in the Caribbean or have sex or eat some delicious food than work on hard problems. The rule about doing what you love assumes a certain length of time. It doesn't mean do what will make you happiest this second, but what will make you happiest over some longer period, like a week or a month. Unproductive pleasures pall eventually. After a while, you get tired of lying on the beach. If you want to stay happy, you have to do something. As a lower bound, you have to like your work more than any unproductive pleasure. You have to like what you do enough that the concept of spare time seems mistaken. Which is not to say you have to spend all your time working. You can only work so much before you get tired and start to screw up. Then you want to do something else, even something mindless. But you don't regard this time as the price and the time you spend working as the pain you endure to earn it. I put the lower bound there for practical reasons. If your work is not your favorite thing to do, you'll have terrible problems with procrastination. You'll have to force yourself to work. And when you resort to that, the results are distinctly inferior. To be happy, I think, you have to be doing something you not only enjoy, but admire. You have to be able to say at the end, wow, that's pretty cool. It doesn't mean you have to make something. If you learn how to hang glide or to speak a foreign language fluently, that will be enough to make you say, for a while at least, wow, that's pretty cool. What there has to be is a test. So one thing that falls short, just short of the standard, I think, is reading books. Except for some books in math and the hard science, there's no test of how well you've read a book. And that's why merely reading books doesn't quite feel like work. You have to do something with what you have read to feel productive. Then he said, I think the best test is one Chino Lee. Not sure who this is. Let's see. No idea. But he said, I think the best test is one Chino Lee taught me. To try to do things that would make your friends say wow. I think that's there's so much to it to really to really digest it, to understand there's an upper and lower bound, even when you do things you love. And even if you do things you love, for example, I'm actually at the moment so grateful that I found something I really love doing. After many years, of course, trying, it's really difficult to find that because when many people don't understand, it always actually starts with your interest. Just follow your interest, but it's so mind-blowing. But over decades of education and university, we have not nurtured this inner natural sense of following your own interests and curiosity. which is easier said than done, because you have to also, like, at the same time understand you who you are better and better. And this is a very difficult question. The longer you wait, or the longer you, you know, the longer you actually postpone the question of understanding who you really are and what are my interests. And some people are lucky to find it out in the early age. Some, it doesn't matter when. I think there's a chance at any time in your life to ask that question and come very close to your real understanding of what is my interest, what I really want to do, what drives me, what, where's this natural curiosity come that comes out of my belly, that drives me every morning, just I wanna just find out more. And this, of course, can shift throughout your life, because that's normal, because who you are is also very organic. It's not a fixed box. It's not a container. It's like, this is Gerhard. No, it's not. And I think that's, like, important to have understanding that if you found what you love, for example, I love software engineering, but there's only maybe 4 hours, 5 hours I can do really focused software engineering, like coding, before I get just really tired and the return on investment. So it just becomes, I think I talked about this once, also a very important concept in flow, that it diminishes. It becomes less and less, and you just, the output, the quality becomes horrible compared to the time you put in. And just make more mistakes you then have to fix the next day. But then again, it's understanding that you found, if you really found something that you love, it's the thing that makes you sit on a Friday evening when everybody goes out celebrating or doing something to just be happy that the week is over, and like, thanks God it's Friday, and they're just like, oh God, this week is over. Now let's forget about the work we're doing 8 hours every day and just start living. I mean, it's a very bizarre thought, actually, that we are living in this state of mind, that we choose something where we're just happy that it's over by the end of the week. And if you really found something that you love, that you can sit, decide, hey, I'm this evening, there's this hard problem, I really have to fix it. Because there's no other choice. If you found something you love, you see it's not a punishment that you have to work on this hard problem. You see where it will lead you to eventually in the long run. In the long run, it gives you so much joy and fulfillment. And if you can see that, then you found something that you really love doing. Because if you work on something that you don't love, you don't see that. You just, like, see this hard problem as, like, a burden. It's like, oh gosh, I don't want to work on this. And then you're just procrastinating. And you're like, try to think about, you start planning your holidays and you start thinking about the future plans just to escape from your current day to day. And I think it's another benchmark. I think Seth Godin said this once in his book. If you really found something you love, you don't try to escape from it. Let this sink in. And what I mean by that is to escape from it by looking forward to the end of the week, by looking forward to just anything that would allow you to just forget for a moment all the things, be it just sitting, I would rather now play video games, I would just party now, I'm planning my holiday already, month ahead, just like really looking forward to that weeks, because I have to endure until I need some holiday in the far horizon so I can endure, I have some purpose to look forward, and kind of like really like find a reason to justify that I actually don't enjoy what I'm doing. It sounds harsh, and I think, you know, like, it's just, I think, a reality check, to be honest. And what's important to understand, it's a really hard question to really find something you love. It's really hard to follow your interests. It's really hard to have the courage to ask, like, who am I really? what are my interests, and making the decisions to actually start this journey. But I'm very confident, like once you actually decide to find out more and walk that path, eventually you find what you really love, and if you find your curiosity, you will end up there. And there, along that way, there's just a lot of, I would say, tests by the universe that will test you. Are you ready for that? Because there are going to be decisions along that path where you might disappoint other people, or like you just, there's a lot of change happening, and it's scary. It's super scary. Get it. There's a lot of uncertainty. It's just like what I love about Paul Graham is like, you know, like it's not, do what you love doesn't mean like it's like the thing that gives you the most joy and the happiness, but in the long run, it's crazy. So I really encourage you to read his essays. I might read another essay next week. There's like so much. And I want to recommend the episodes from the Founders Podcast. I'm going to put them in the show notes. There are, I think, 4 episodes about Paul Graham. And they're amazing. I love them. So if you're into this, I will link them in the show notes. All right. It's going to be a show, short episode. Next week, they're going to be a bit more, or maybe not. I think I like this kind of format. It's not too short, not too long. And I wish you a wonderful day. And until next week, all righty.